Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. If you're ever looking to get behind the scenes, it's simple. Follow us on Instagram at TSN1050, or you will see myself, O-Dog and Noodles, what we do in the studio, before the show, during the show, after the show, constantly updating stories and best of clips. Again, follow us on Instagram at TSN1050.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
Brian Hayes and Steve Simmons of the Toronto Sun in here. We're just talking during the break that the Maple Leaf camp opens up in less than a month, and there's a big media tour that's going to be upcoming. You were saying this year the big one is in Chicago, where generally speaking it's one representative from each team. And let's pretend for argument's sake that that is the case. Who do you think gets the call for the Leafs?
I would think Matthews, just on the way you view things and the story he needs to tell and the rest of it. And the fact he's pretty comfortable doing media, I have found, as he's gotten on. He's gotten better and better at it. That would, I think, be the choice. But I'm not so sure that's the way it goes. I have not been to one of these. They're very limiting in terms of how who gets in and how many get in. And historically, you know, our national hockey writer, whomever that has been at various times, you know, most recently Mike Zeisberger and now Michael Trakos, they would be the guys probably going to that kind of thing. And it's like set up, you know, it's kind of like pre-Oscars. You know, you get this much time with this much guy in this room at that time, then you move on to, it's all scheduled, it's all planned out, it's very well executed, It's very organized.
Oh, it's not their first rodeo, and they know what they're doing. A lot of it's puff piece time, too. Well, these are superstars, nothing going on.
It's to get as many stories out as possible about your biggest stars by the biggest people in the business.
That's why I would think you got to have Tavares there. I mean, I would have Matthews there, too. But for argument's sake, let's say there's 31 players there, one from each team. Matthews, to me, is still the face of the Toronto Maple Leafs. But John Tavares is the more interesting story right now because he's also a superstar, and he made the biggest decision in maybe free agency history or real close to it. And now he's about to embark on a completely new journey in the biggest hockey market in the world. And if you're the NHL, don't you want him there and getting that story out to the rest of the hockey world?
Well, historically, this has happened in New York. And you would think if this was in New York, there'd almost be a demand to ask for Tavares. And so, you know, you're in that kind of circumstance where, you know, that his story they'd want to tell it. And it's the time of year where you have some time and some space to tell it. And you have the people there who can do that. So, again, not knowing the way it all works and who's going to be there and... Like, is there anybody on the Columbus Blue Jackets that really generates any national interest?
Not really.
Is there
Zach Werenski, Seth
anybody
Jones
on the Minnesota Wild going to, you know, there's a bunch of teams you could say, you know what, you could pass over. It's like All-Star games. You could pass over those guys from a national perspective.
Yeah. Bring in Carolina. Who wants to talk to anybody in Carolina?
Bring in the 20 players or how many it is that really matter.
Well, because to your point, even though they've had their issues as a team the past couple of years, Taves and Kane, you would think you'd want to talk to. Well, in Pittsburgh, Crosby and Malkin.
And some would say Kessel.
Maybe Phil. Phil. Up here in Toronto, it would be Tavares and Matthews. That's who you would want to speak with.
Boston, Bergeron and Marchand. And maybe Pastrnak.
How about Chara, who's going to the Hall of Fame as the captain of the team?
So, you know, there's markets where there are several guys that you would want some to speak with, and then there's markets that there's nobody you'd want to speak with.
Yeah. I think
who would you pick from Tampa?
Stamkos would be the guy. Captain, he's the guy. He'd be close. Kucherov, I don't know where he is.
He's the best interview. Stamkos is one of the best five or six interviews in the NHL.
Yeah, and yet Hedman, I think, is the best player on the team. I think Victor Hedman may be the best defenseman on earth. He's right there. It's Carlson if he's healthy and Doughty and Hedman. I think that has been established. There are three defensemen in the league who are fighting for the title of best defenseman. I can't think of a fourth.
Seth Jones would be my fourth. He would be the next
he's
guy.
He's a distant fourth, though.
But there
Roman
might
Yossi,
be.
P.K. Yeah. Subban I might put ahead. I would probably put ahead of Seth Jones.
I wouldn't at this stage, but the interesting thing is the top three to me. Because... We don't know at this point, and that's what's fascinating about the season coming up. One of the things, many things. Erik Karlsson. What is Erik Karlsson right now? Last year, at this time, after the playoff that the Senators had and the playoff he had, where he was just sensational, to me, the best players in the NHL, depending on what order you put them, were Sidney Crosby, Connor McDavid, and Erik Karlsson. Those were the top three. Now, some might have one, some might have the other two, but those are your three. Well, 1 year later, the two best players in the NHL are, depending on how you do it, Sidney Crosby and Connor McDavid. But I don't know where Erik Karlsson goes anymore. And I don't know, is he top 10? Is he top 20? Is he healthy enough to be great? What
team is he going to be on? Because I think you have to factor that in.
Oh, sure.
The projection of his production in Ottawa compared to anywhere else in the league, I think will be different. I think he'll be great even if he is in Ottawa. Like, and this idea that they have to trade him, they don't have to trade him. I think it's in their best interest to trade him. I'm surprised they haven't traded him. I'm still surprised that it's August 15th and Karlsson is still technically an Ottawa Senator. But you've got to get as the best value you possibly can. And maybe because of the conversation we're having right now, that's factoring into his value. Is there might be some teams that want to see it again. That, and maybe you make a deal 1 month into the year. Maybe like there's a comparison here with what Donaldson's going through with the Jays. I can make a strong case, and I would make a case. I would bring him back next year. And I understand that if Vladdy's coming up and he's a third baseman, you want to play him third base. Vladdy's probably not coming up to start the year anyway. Chances are, because of service time, he's coming up 2-3 weeks into the season. He may not be a big league third baseman anyway. You can find a way to platoon. You can find a way to be, you know, get him DH at bats. Maybe he plays left field. I don't know. But if you feel like there's value in trading Josh Donaldson or there's a potential market for him a month into next season because he's healthy for a month and lighting it up, do it. You're rebuilding. You're not winning next year anyway if you're the Jays. And the same thing with Ottawa. They're not winning. And if teams are like, listen, we're willing to give you this, that, or the other, which they would right now. But if I see Karlsson at 100% and he's lights out, I'll give you this extra piece a month into the season. Maybe you can make that work.
And if they've attached Bobby Ryan's contract to any deal that involves Karlsson, it complicates matters. And I think that's one of the reasons why no deal's been made
yet. It could be the holdup.
But he has got so much talent when he can play. And he can do things no one else can do. So is he that guy?
I think he will be. And I think he is.
Or is he a reasonable facsimile?
Here is former NFL QB, two-time Super Bowl champ, current Steelers TV analyst Charlie Batch making his debut here on Overdrive on the Maple Toyota Hotline. What's happening, Charlie?
Not much. How you doing?
We're doing well, man. We were talking earlier about all these fights in camp. You would have been a part of a lot of camps as a quarterback, though. Do you ever get in any fights? Did you see any fights featuring quarterbacks in camp?
No, I have never seen a quarterback fight. I don't know if any has gone on now, but that's pretty rare because we don't get hit or we're not in those verbal spats that a lot of other positions are in.
What would the reaction be like, though, if somehow a stud starting quarterback started throwing blows? Who's more likely to break it up? The head coach running in, the GM, the owner, the O-line? Like, how would that play out if a quarterback ever did get into a fight?
Yeah, I don't know how that one's going to play out. There's no way a head coach or a general manager will be able to break that up. It almost turn into a baseball brawl, you know, and both benches clear and everybody just kind of getting into the middle of things and you know, how I don't know how that will break up. But I just know, you know, based off my experience in Pittsburgh, you know, that's one of those things that the head coach always addresses and listen, we're not fighting. And of course, he threatens positions. You know, if you get into a fight, guess what? You probably will be cut if you're not of value to the team. So that kind of, you know, it starts with the head coach. So hopefully no fights occur.
I'd worry about the quarterback with the clipboard. Because he has an advantage. It's like wrestling when you can take that chair over the guy's head. That clipboard can do some damage.
Yeah, you're right. And I think the biggest thing is that players realize that it's practice and you're probably not going to be able to get fined unless it's an in-team disciplinary and that's going to happen. But if it's in the stadium, you're not going to see those type of fights occur. So I just think, you know, if you want to see these type of competitions go on between teams, you know, players just have to take it among themselves. Say, listen, we're here to get better. Let's not go out here and get anyone injured.
with Charlie Batch, longtime NFL quarterback, current Steelers TV analyst. I'm assuming there's a lot of talk about Roethlisberger in Pittsburgh, and he got banged up at practice yesterday. And then you've got Jalen Ramsey down in Jacksonville taking a run at him. And Ramsey took a run at almost every quarterback in the league, short of a few. If you're not familiar with Jalen Ramsey, I know you are, Charlie, but stud cornerback down in Jacksonville, and he did a piece, sit-down piece with GQ, where he just went on a rant about all these different quarterbacks. And he did claim that Roethlisberger is overrated. I'm paraphrasing a little bit. Do you expect Roethlisberger to have to answer to the antics of Jalen Ramsey?
Oh, you're absolutely right. And I think that's something that come October, I think it's an October game that they're playing down in Jacksonville, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe I'm wrong. You probably know better than I would because I haven't looked at the calendar. But, of course, when you're, you know, Jalen Ramsey's position, it's going to be one of those things where, say, hey, we got the better of him last year. You know, they had forced six turnovers off of Ben Roethlisberger last year. So, you know, coming going into that offseason, maybe that's how he feels. But it's a different category. And, of course, you know, the Steelers are going to have that calendar, that day's calendar circled on the calendar just because they lost to him twice last year and ultimately lost at home in the playoffs. So, you know, there's no love lost between those two. Trust me, there's going to be it's going to be you know, pretty perky as this game approaches.
Yeah, you're right. It's a Sunday night or two on NBC. It's week 11, November 18th, Pittsburgh and Jacksonville. How do you feel about Jalen Ramsey? Is something about that position, man. Cornerbacks are always spouting off, and I kind of like it. Like, I don't know if he's just doing it for the effect or if he's actually put thought into it, but I like that he's caused a stir and he's got people talking and people focused on him. I would think if you're in Jacksonville, which has been a run-of-the-mill organization for a long time and kind of an outpost of the NFL, there's probably a level of appreciation that Jalen Ramsey's kind of putting them on the map. How do you feel about how outspoken he was with GQ?
Well, he is very talented. There's no question about it. But when, you know, you're a cornerback, most cornerbacks that come from Florida State, they talk a lot. So if you can back it up, guess what? People respect you. And, you know, the one thing that I gained a lot of respect for him, you know, after they beat the Steelers last year and they were getting ready to play New England, this was a guy who wasn't afraid to bite his tongue, you know, where most people don't want bulletin board material. And he basically said, listen, we're going to New England. We're going to win. And he used a different adjective with it. And people kind of gave him that look like, why would you say that? Well, when you're the final four left, you have the opportunity to win a Super Bowl. And he was that confident in his team. They didn't get the job done. But right now, they people look at that Jacksonville team and they realize they are very talented. And if, you know, you look and see if Blake Bortles can get things going, he can maybe get that team over the top. But they are one of the final six that people have in the NFL this year.
Charlie, there was an NHL goalie named Patrick Waugh who was once criticized by a member of one of the teams they were playing, and he said he couldn't hear him because he had his Stanley Cup rings in his ears. And I think if I was Ben, I might say just about the same thing with his Super Bowl rings at this point in time.
Yeah, you're right. But, you know, in fairness, you know, yes, he does have two, but it's been a while since he has been back to the Super Bowl. So that's the fire that's lit underneath him because he wants to get back to winning that Super Bowl. And he is the last person on this roster that has a Super Bowl ring. So you do have players with experience, but not a Super Bowl ring. So this is what this team is playing for. They all know they're putting all their chips in. They know they're a talented group. They don't know how long this run is going to happen, especially when you have Le'Veon Bell going through his contract dispute. And, you know, with no matter what numbers worked offensively, top five in the last few years, you know, they still haven't had a Super Bowl ring. So this is what this team is shooting for, and ultimately that's what they want this year.
Why hasn't a team that has been at quarterback, that has Le'Veon Bell at running back, that has the best receiver in all of football and Antonio Brown at receiver, why haven't they been able to win?
Yeah, I think that's the million-dollar question that a lot of people want to know. Last year, I ultimately feel like the last person they needed to lose last year was Ryan Shazier on that defensive side. I mean, they had everything going. They were tops in sacks last year, but there was a void last year. They just didn't know how to replace at the end of that season when Shazier was there. They were trying to use multiple schemes and multiple players to fit what was ultimately affected them when they lost the game last year, and that was a huge loss. They're still looking to replace that. This year, they brought John Bob Bostic in. They have Kalor Medvedev, and they're trying to figure out which one of those two can maybe fill the void, but it's a huge loss anytime you lose a person of Ryan Shazier's caliber.
We're chatting with Charlie Batch, longtime NFL quarterback and current Steelers TV analyst. As we look forward to this upcoming season, there's a lot of focus on the greatness of Tom Brady, potentially the friction between him and Belichick, what the Patriots can maybe bring to the table again. Is that all noise to you, this idea that Brady and Belichick aren't on the same page, or maybe Brady's handling things differently because of his age or whatever? Are you altering your expectations of the New England Patriots at all?
No, I'm not, just because you have 12 back there at quarterback. And Brady, I mean, he is the best of all time. Everyone knows that, and it's not cliche. So that's been part of the Steelers' hurdle over the last couple of years. They couldn't get past New England 2 years ago. They were looking at New England last year, and then there was a hiccup, and they lost to Jacksonville. So, you know, anytime that you don't get back to the point of where you were the prior season, you know, it's a disappointing season. So the Patriots, they know they have everything lined up. They're in a weaker division, so you expect them to win, what is this, 13 in a row for them, whatever that is for the division title, but you expect to have for them to have a one or two seed and playing at home at some point during the playoffs. And for the Steelers to get to where they need to get to, they know Tom Brady's going to be in their path.
It's easy for me as a non-football player to say Brady's the best I've ever seen, or it's easy for Brian to make the same claim. But when it comes from you, it has a little more credibility because of the years you played in the NFL and the teams you started for. What is it about Tom Brady, in your view, that makes him so different from the other quarterbacks who have been highly successful in the NFL?
Yeah, I think when you just look at just where he's at, he's never content. He's always evolutionizing in position. You know, he's not mobile, so you know he's not going to beat you with his legs, but he's always trying to figure out that niche in the offseason to get better. And then sit back and say, here he is at 40-something years old, and you're like, wow, he had his best season last year. He led the league in yardage. You're just shaking your head because that's where that fall-off occurs. So he's always ready to go, and it's just unfortunate, you know, that every other quarterback has to go through him. And when I say he's the greatest, I mean, we're watching history in the making. I mean, this is the guy who went to 8 Super Bowls. 8? You're like, are you kidding me? How do you go to 8 Super Bowls? And you won 5 of them. So this is something, I think I'm right? 4 or 5? He won 5 for sure. You probably wouldn't know better.
Oh, yeah,
he's
been to 8, man. He's 5-3.
Yeah, you're 5-3. So, you know, you look back and you're just like, this is unbelievable that this guy continues to get to that ultimate level. And it's funny because when you went to a Super Bowl, and we have this among our team, players in Pittsburgh who won Super Bowls, you know, you start asking that question, would you want to go to the Super Bowl and lose, or would you not want to go at all? And I'm like, no, you want to go to the Super Bowl because you know you have a chance to win a title when those zeros hit, when the clock hits zero. So it's just one of those things that is just amazing. And I quite frankly don't think that we'll ever see this again in our lifetime.
Always appreciate you doing this, Charlie. We'll see what happens this upcoming season. We'll catch you down the road. Thanks, man.
All right, I appreciate it. Thank you.
There's Charlie Batch joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Maple Toyota takes away the fears of buying a pre-owned vehicle by sharing service history, lean history, and accident history. Visit MapleToyota.com.
One thing I can say I have that Tom Brady doesn't have. He's been to 8 Super Bowls. I've been to 19.
You've covered 19.
Yes.
How about that? You're the GOAT of Super Bowls, not Tom Brady.
I don't think so. But I'm just.
Well, I'm sure like Peter King's probably been to 30.
It's funny to hear that, though, when you think about it.
8.
And if I add up, I think it might be more than 19, but I know for sure it's 19.
5-3. And you know what? It's interesting about
the
eras.
And he should have won the 2 Giants losses.
Yeah, but they, you know, that Giants defense got after him. They didn't put a lot of points on the board.
No, but they should have. I mean, it was the crazy, crazy catch in the one.
Yeah, and they were the better team.
That will never be one. That will never happen again.
18-0 when they got to that Super Bowl.
The drop.
I don't remember which one was that.
When Brady's wife went nuts after the game.
Yeah. What was that? Amendola that dropped it?
No, it wasn't Amendola. It was the other smaller. Wes Welker.
It was Welker, you're right.
Yes.
And Welker was like concussed at the time, I believe, anyway.
And Mrs. Brady was not happy.
Well, and that's the thing, when you compare the eras of greatness, you know, in the NBA, you can dispute whether or not this should be the case, but it's developed into Jordan versus LeBron. And Jordan's 6-0 in the NBA Finals. LeBron is, what is he, 3-5? Or has he been to 9 now? I think he's actually been to 9, so I think he's 3-6. And then you look at the NFL, and a lot of people look at Montana, and they'd say Montana's the GOAT. And I believe Montana was 4-0 in the Super Bowl. Brady's 5-3. So who do you think is the greatest player? But based on how they performed in the biggest game, now it's team sports, Jordan and Montana, the old school guys, undefeated. Brady and LeBron, they've lost.
I think it comes down to who you're playing sometimes. And if you go at the San Francisco Giants, San Francisco 49ers Super Bowls, and most of them were blowouts and very impressive blowouts. The teams they were playing in some of those games were not great teams. They just happened to get there that year. I think it's different. You look at some of the Chicago Bulls wins, the NBA, you know, and they beat Utah, I think, one year.
I think they may have got them past them a couple times, but yeah. Stockton and Malone were on those teams.
Like, they were not really saying they weren't good teams. I'm just saying they weren't defending champion kind of teams. You know, they had to beat the Pistons. That Pistons team that won championships, the Chicago went through them, you know, to get there, and that was worth something. But it's who you're playing. I mean, Golden State played Cleveland the last couple of years, and that
LeBron and a bunch
Cleveland
of scrubs.
Team was, yeah, it was LeBron and who else?
Yeah.
Now, there was Kyrie there at one time. That's not a who else with Love. That's some talent. But that one team that LeBron had in the finals, I mean, it was LeBron and like five of my friends.
Well, this past year was a joke, really. I mean, it was, you just, that's why them blowing the first game with J.R. Smith doing what he did, you knew it was over at that point. They were going to get swept, and that's exactly what happened.
Still one of the single most incredible things I've ever seen in a sporting
one
event.
One of the
as it was coming,
biggest
as it was.
Bonehead moments in the history of pro sports. The guy, he thinks they're leading, and he runs out the clock. And allows Golden State to dummy them in overtime.
The body language on LeBron.
Yeah.
From that moment,
he knew he was done.
I was in a casino in Las Vegas watching that. It was in the Stanley Cup Final, and I was in a casino in Las Vegas, and
yep.
Half the people in the casino had money on Golden State, and half the people in the casino had money on Cleveland.
If you had Cleveland with the points, if you took the points, you were still alive. Now I don't remember how
overtime was completely one sided.
Did Golden State win by double digits in the end?
Something like that. But
because
those are covered.
Those are the worst when you think you've got a dog, you're betting on a dog, and you feel good about it. The whole game, Cleveland was in the lead or real close to it, and then it goes to overtime, and they wilt and they fall
and
apart.
And he gets that rebound, and you're thinking, it's just over.
Put it up.
Got the rebound.
Yeah, if he puts it up immediately, they win.
Yeah.
Great. One of the bigger bonehead plays in history. And what's amazing about history, like that, like moments like that, now that we know how everything's played out with LeBron leaving, LeBron probably knew he was going to L.A. before that series even started. He probably knew last summer that he was going to L.A. This idea that he
I don't think he does anything by accident.
No, not a chance. This idea that these guys don't put any thought into it. The same thing with Tavares. Obviously, at some point over the past 12 to 24 months, Tavares had thought of the idea of being a Maple Leaf. There's no way that didn't happen.
Thought of it, but didn't come to the conclusion. I believe him on this. I believe that Saturday was the turning point for him where he knew it was down to one or the other. And he knew that he had to make a decision, and he went with his gut instinct.
Sure, but he had been thinking about it.
Oh, yeah, you have to think about it.
He had envisioned himself as a Maple Leaf.
The biggest lie told in sport is when you ask the free agent about next year, and they say, I've never thought about it. It's your life. You, of course, think about it. You can't help but think about it.
And the biggest moment in the business element of your career, as a free agent, cashing in, why would you not? And your agent is going to make you think of it. Your agent and your parents and your friends are all going to be asking you constantly. So even if somehow you were not, you were actually capable of completely escaping it internally, externally, it's going to come onto your plate at some point.
J.R. Smith's going to live with this forever. This is going to be
part of his
resume. And whenever his name comes up, that's going to come up.
It's his Buckner moment. Like, that's what it was, the Bill Buckner moment. And I loved how afterwards people were like, oh, have you ever heard J.R. Smith? He's not going to care about it. He cared about it. This idea that he put forth the front, like it didn't matter, he's moved on already, was completely bogus. You don't embarrass yourself like that on international TV and get over it within a day or two.
Well, it can happen because you do something stupid or don't know the score or aren't aware, and it can happen sometimes almost accidentally. And that's what happened to Steve Smith in 1986 when he scored in his own net with the Edmonton Oilers and ended their
right, but he still lives with it today.
I was at that game. I covered that game. And Steve Smith, he's lived with it for all this time, and there is still no explanation, really, for what happened there. And
it was a spur-of-the-moment thing.
He shot the puck, and Grant Fuhr wasn't expecting a puck to be shot at him, and he thought he was rimming it around behind the net, and he missed, and it went in. And the funny thing was, it happened with enough time for the Oilers to come back and tie the game, and they were so stunned by what happened that they never came close to tying that game, from my recollection.
Won the cup the next year, and he got the cup second, I guess, right, after Gretzky. We've got the Chevrolet Silverado 250 giveaway. We'll get to that at some point this hour. And a couple of Canadian superstars, kids, in the city tonight. Which one will have a bigger profile in the country over the next decade? We'll tell you about that next. All right, the Grit Grinders we know will be pumped for this. The Chevrolet Silverado 250 is back August 24th through the 26th at the Canadian Tire Motorsport Park. Listen to Overdrive all week long for your chance to win a four-pack of weekend super tickets, including parking and paddock access valued at over $250 a pop. You can get all the details at tsn1050.ca. Phone lines are open, 416-870-1050. 416-870-1050. The Ryerson Rams basketball team is playing a prominent American college this evening. Which team are they playing tonight? 416-870-1050. If you can name that college that Ryerson is playing tonight, you win the four-pack of tickets to the Chevrolet Silverado 250. Again, more details at tsn1050.ca. 416-870-1050. RJ Barrett from the GTA happens to be on that team, playing tonight, making his debut for that team. And this is a kid, unless you've been sleeping under a rock, you're aware of his story. His dad is Rowan Barrett, was a member of the national team for a long time, and has been overlooking the national team for a long time, working in conjunction with Steve Nash and others. And R.J. Barrett was considered the best high school player in the world leading into this collegiate season. He's expected to be certainly a top 5 or 10 pick in next year's draft. There's a chance he'll be the first overall pick. And if he is, he'll become the third Canadian ever to go first overall.
In a very short time.
Anthony Bennett going first, Andrew Wiggins going second, and potentially R.J. Barrett going third. All three from the GTA, all in the last, what, 7 or 8 years? So you got R.J. Barrett playing tonight, and he's going to have a big profile because of the school he's at. He plays at Duke. If you've already called in and you have the answer, there you go. I can't continue to dance around it. The answer is Duke, and R.J. Barrett plays for Duke. And he's
hard
playing
to
tonight.
Not have that answer.
Eventually, you got to get to it. I think we have a winner. And he's playing tonight, and downtown at BMO Field for TFC, their matchup against Vancouver and the Whitecaps for the Canadian Championship tonight, the second leg of that. Alfonso Davies, we're not sure if he's going to play, but he might play. And Davies is already being labeled as like the great Canadian soccer hope. He's going to be on transfer to Bayern Munich starting next year. Munich is one of the great powerhouses of European football. He's 17, turning 18. He's a striker. He's magical with the ball. He can dribble. He can shoot. He can do it all. Who do you think is going to have a bigger profile in our country over the next decade? Alfonso Davies or R.J. Barrett?
I think R.J. Barrett, just because of the sport he plays compared to the sport that Alfonso Davies plays. And also because Alfonso Davies is going to be playing for Bayern Munich, which is... Unless you watch television specifically, I'm going to watch this team play on this specific date, you won't necessarily be tuned into how that team does unless you're in that small fraternity of soccer guys who follow everything that's going on all over the place. It's been a pretty amazing run for Canadian basketball over the last 7, 8 years in that you've seen, at one time, there were 3 Toronto or GTA players picked in the top 15 in one NBA draft. And I tried to look it up on a year-by-year-by-year basis. It was hard to find 3 guys from Chicago at top 15 picks in any draft. It was hard to find 3 New Yorkers in any draft. The players come from all over the United States. So to have 3 guys from one market all in the top 15, along with what's happened with Wiggins, along with the other players, Anthony Bennett. And now you're going to have another high draft. There was a kid from Kitchener whose name now escapes me, playing in the NBA right now. He's probably the second best Canadian in the NBA. Jamal Murray.
Jamal yes. Murray, yeah.
These names don't come.
Jamal Murray, I don't he's have it in Denver. In front of you got Tyler Ennis is obviously. Yeah.
But I'm saying Jamal Murray is a big-time
legitimate player.
Yeah. And we expect Barrett to be a star.
Yes.
And we were expecting Andrew Wiggins to be a star. And, of course, Steve Nash is the biggest star of all. I mean, no one has come yet and maybe ever will come to where he
Unless
was.
You can win back-to-back MVPs. It's probably going to be difficult to achieve more than that. But
and
RJ
a Hall
Barrett,
of Fame career.
And yeah, and he'll be in the Hall of Fame, and he was the first one to do it. The pioneer is always going to be the guy. Like in golf, there could be a Canadian that wins two or three majors in the future. Mike Weir is always going to be the reference point. I think Steve Nash, that applies to him. But RJ Barrett has all the tools of being an absolute stud superstar. And Andrew Wiggins had the same kind of thing. He had explosiveness, athleticism. He went to a big program in Kansas. But Barrett, it appears, based on the way he is being defined as a player, he could even be a step or two above where Wiggins was. I think Barrett will have a more prominent role here because he'll be in our backyard. And because even though basketball is an international sport, much more so than baseball or hockey, it's nowhere close to the field of competition that soccer applies. So in a way, because Alphonso Davies is going up against more competition than even R.J. Barrett would, it's going to be more difficult for him to break through and become an international superstar. That said, if he can do it, I think he has the potential to be one of the biggest athletes in the history of our country, because that is the one thing that that sport has been absolutely itching for. We need a transcendent superstar, and the way we generally approach soccer, not the diehards, but the fair-weather fans, and I would include myself in this company. If Europe tells me this guy's great, then I will agree that he's great. If MLS tells me he's great, then he's MLS great, with all due respect. So if in Europe, and not only Germany, Spain, England, if everyone is talking about this Alphonso Davies type, this guy who's breaking through, who's scoring goals, who's an electric player, breaks into the top 15 or 20 internationally, that has the opportunity to have a much bigger impact in this country than what R.J. Barrett's going to do, because Barrett is further down the line, because of Nash, because of Wiggins, because of Bennett. Him going first overall next year, if he does, will not have the same cachet as when Bennett went first overall, because he was the first one to do it.
Well, here's
we've never had an all-time great international soccer player play for our country or be from our country.
In about a 10-year realm, there has been a continuation of promising to great basketball players being developed in this country. And so now we're seeing them almost on an annual basis. Somebody being a top 10 pick, somebody being a top 15 pick, somebody who's going to be a starter in the NBA, somebody, you know, all of these guys. And so we now are used to that. We're kind of used to it. And until they can form a national team at an Olympics or an event like that, if they can put a national team together, for example, for the 2020 Olympics, and you can put Barrett on there, and you can put Wiggins on there, and you can put these guys on there, I think then they're going to get a national identity for people who don't necessarily follow or watch basketball. The way Steve Nash in the 2000 Olympics just wowed the entire nation in how he performed and how he played. The difference for Davies is the sport has never had a star. We've had sort of stars, but we've never had a breakout world-class soccer star. And I think this kid can be that. If they're betting the kind of money, if Bayern Munich is betting the kind of money they're betting on Alphonso Davies, then I suspect he is the real deal. And this country, and we've never been on a track in soccer that made, say, here are the, like we see in hockey at this time of year, you can almost name who the next group of 16-year-olds are, the next group of 17-year-olds are, the next group of 18-year-olds. We don't know that yet in soccer. We haven't really known it for years. So this guy's an opportunity to change the entire landscape of a national team program of kids growing up who say, I want to be like him. Because there isn't. Who do you want to be
like? There isn't one. There isn't a soccer player in my lifetime that has had a coast-to-coast profile that people have been familiar with, that people have looked up to. And again, it's because they have to make it over in Europe. Like that Steve Nash, when you win an MVP in the NBA, that's saying you're the best player on earth. That means if you win an MVP in the NBA, you would go to the Chinese League, the Spanish League, the Brazilian League, and you would carve that league up. You'd obviously put up absurd numbers, and you'd be a lock MVP there. If you are the best player in MLS, that doesn't mean anything in terms of the international conversation. It means you could be a run-of-the-mill guy for Stoke City in the EPL, well, with all due respect to MLS.
Who is the MVP in the American Hockey League this season?
I don't know.
That's a point.
Exactly. Nobody knows.
Because is there that much difference between the caliber of the American Hockey League vis-a-vis the caliber of the National Hockey League compared to the caliber of MLS, to the caliber of the Premier League?
It's probably a comparative conversation, I would think, that you could align the two. So that's why Davies, even though Barrett will be in our backyard and he'll be talked about more, and if he goes first overall and he dominates, it will get more day-to-day attention. It won't change things.
Davies
exactly.
Can change things.
Davies can change things. Davies over the next decade can change the sport and the optics of Canadian soccer if he goes overseas and makes it and becomes a stud over there and spends his whole career there and comes back and plays in the MLS when he's 35.
Greg Strong of the Canadian Press wrote a really interesting piece that went across the nation, I think either a day or so ago, about the depth and strength of Canadian sport. And once upon a time, Canadian sport did what? We developed hockey players. And then once in a while, an Olympian here or an Olympian here, you know, the odd basketball player, the odd baseball player. If you're looking now, there are the depth of athlete in this country, from sport to sport to sport, there's more Canadians in the NFL than have ever been there before. There are better Canadians playing in the CFL than we've ever seen before. You can run through it. I mean, hockey's hockey.
Also, Canadians in the NHL than ever before.
Yeah,
because the rest of the world's catching up.
The rest of the world's catching up, especially the Americans, where a lot of the players are now coming from America. And I think America will actually take over hockey at a certain point in time. I don't know when that cross will be on the calendar, but I think they've done such a great job in the last 10 years of developing players, that this is just the
beginning. I don't think that's fair to Canada, because Canada still is developing the best players. Like, we, at times, because it's our own country, we're overly critical. The Americans have done a lot better, and they continue to grow. But look at the best players in the world.
Connor McDavid right now, probably.
Sidney Crosby.
Where's Austin Matthews in America?
He's not.
Where's Patrick Kane in America? You can go back and forth on certain things. Where is Wheeler in America? There's a lot of good American players.
I'm not disputing that there's not a lot of great American players. There are, but Canadians are still pumping out at a level that is unparalleled.
But Joey Votto is the greatest Canadian, really, since Larry Walker, and maybe the greatest Canadian hitter ever.
Yeah, you look at his stats alone, they're off the charts.
You can make that case. You know, this group of guys in the NBA. And now you're seeing swimmers like Taylor Rock and Kylie Mass and Penny Oleksiak. You know, there's a group of swimmers, and there's a group of skiers, and there's just so many, and depth in sprinting now,
which
Andre DeGrasse, who's hurt, but
should be the case. We've got over 30 million people.
I know, but historically we've been great at like four things.
No, I know that, but like Canada is what, like a top 20 or 30 populated country in the world? I don't know exactly where they would be on the rankings, but like Iceland was in the World Cup. Iceland. You get 300,000 people. They had to go through Europe to get there.
Someone told me, what do you need, 13 players?
11 on the pitch.
Well, 11 on, but you need some subs. So you got 13 guys in your country that can play. I'm sure we have 13 players that can play.
Well, they can beat like Honduras Costa Rica or something.
The soccer organizations of this country, whether it be the Canadian Soccer Association or what they call Soccer Canada now, or the Provincial Association, they've been at war forever. And because they've been at war forever, they've developed nothing over the years, and they've squandered opportunity after opportunity. Now they're turning it over to John Herdman and hoping that he can change all of this history.
Very politically driven.
There's zero reason why Canada shouldn't be great at soccer.
Well, at least every once in a while. And they haven't been in the World Cup since 86. You're telling me...
And they didn't score in 86.
At some point over those 32 years, they didn't put together a collection of guys who could win something?
Yeah,
because... Not win the World Cup. I don't need you winning the World Cup, but qualify.
Kind of reminds me right now of basketball. because now we are actually producing basketball players. We're producing
talent-wise at a
level that
top five in the world.
Never before.
Americans are still gone from everybody else, but Brazil, Argentina, Spain, Canada.
When will we see a Canadian team like we see the hockey teams? When
will we see a Canadian team? I don't think
the
ever
best players.
They don't have the same passion to play for the national team. That's been very notable.
It's not in the culture of the sport, but it is for the United States.
Yeah, they want to be there.
They want to be there and they want to win. And I got to tell you, I was there at the gold medal game that the U.S. won in the last Summer Olympics. And Kyle Lowry was the last guy on the court. And he grabbed the ball. And he walked off and he walked by me right after he grabbed the ball. And I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I'm not giving it back. I'm not giving this back. This is mine." And he was like oozing pride. It was the first championship of his life. He never won in high school. He never won in college. He hadn't won in the NBA. And this was the greatest team moment of his life. And he was a backup on the U.S. Olympic team. But he had the ball, and as he said, "I'm not giving it back."
Good for him. Whoever grabs it, man, you hold on to it. Possession is what, 9/10 of the law? Time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. I am on Philly at home paying $2 against Boston. I know Boston never loses, but eventually they're going to lose, and Philly's a pretty good team. At home paying $2, I'll take them. Cleveland gets a win tonight in Cincinnati, and Houston's lost 5 in a row. That will not continue. They win by 2+ at home against Colorado tonight. Throw down 20, you can score 89. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, get way into the game. All right, Steve, it's been a fun afternoon. Sounds like Danny Jansen will not be playing tonight for the Jays, so if you're looking forward to seeing the young catcher, he's getting a night off tonight. He's got to be rattled about that.
I liked him. Just watching him, I mean, he looks, you hate to say that after two games, but he looks comfortable. He looks comfortable behind the plate. He looked comfortable at the plate. He looks like a guy that will play a long time in the big leagues. Is he going to be a star? I highly doubt it, but
they need to find some depth at that position because Russell Martin's not the answer.
No, and I think what will happen now, if I'm reading this properly, is that unless they trade Russell Martin between now and next season, that Jansen will probably be the starter. Martin will back up. Martin will play other positions when need be, and he's capable of playing other positions. Maybe he'll hit a little, like he has in the second half of the season, or maybe he won't hit at all, like he did in the first half.
$20 million utility player. Yeah. That's how you want to build a ball club.
But here's the worst thing you could do, though, in the circumstance. If you equate the $20 million, and you say, we need to get $20 million worth of value out of them, then you're going to play him every day. Or try and play him every day. And by playing him every day, you're hurting one of your better prospects. So what's the value in that? If you can't move the money, use it to your best advantage. Now you have money coming off the books. You've got $13 million coming off in Jay Happ. You've got another $13 million coming off in Marco Estrada. I presume you have 20-some million coming off in Donaldson.
You still got 20-plus with Tulowitzki, 15-plus with Martin, 11.5 with Morales.
Yeah. I mean, if I could find a place for Morales, you know.
Morales, I'd just get rid of. Well, like I eat the money and tell him, forget that we exist and leave us alone.
Well, here's the problem with having Morales is it means you have to play Teoscar Hernandez in the outfield.
Right. You know, he's got no flexibility. He has to DH.
It's not even flexibility. He's got no instincts. Like, you watch him, he just has zero instincts for the ball. Another one last night, they don't count as fouls when the ball drops into foul territory and no one touches it on a ball that should be caught. It's one of the flaws of baseball's scoring rules. And so those kind of balls get hit and happen and bing, you know, that's it.
What are you going to do, Steve? We tried to change the world the past 3 hours. I think we accomplished that.
Yeah, I got my usual. As soon as I heard your voice on the station, I switched channels.
Oh, really?
Yes,
I get a couple of those tweets?
I get that note every... And you know,
those are always nice.
By the way, those guys are the ones who never miss a show.
They're listening all the time.
Every time.
And they're going to chirp you.
Thanks for being here, guys.
Shout out. Thanks, Steve.
Always a pleasure, Brian.
There's Steve Simmons of the Toronto Sun. We're out of here. We'll be back tomorrow at 4 p.m. We'll chat then.